Hi, Meryl.
Good morning, Joanne. How are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
Doing all right.
I hope. Got birds cawing all over. Hey, Carol.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hi. Oh, excuse me for eating my breakfast.
I quickly finish.
We just came back from our walk. And I quickly showered.
So, Carol, did you get my email?
I was just going to say, we did. And it's funny because Michael went back on, you know, went to the Best Buy. And they had the camera that we already have on one of our computers. So he wound up just ordering that one. He said he knows how that works. So I said,
fine. Oh, that's good. I don't know. I just, you know, they got good reviews. So.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long I'm going to actually need it because if I get a newer computer, it'll have.
Right. Then it has it. Right.
Yeah.
It's like everything, you know, they just encourage you to buy new.
Yeah. Well, mine's pretty old.
Yeah, so's mine. But before this, did you ever need it? No.
No.
Hopefully we'll get out of quarantine and we'll never need it again.
Exactly.
It's so humid out there.
I see Joanne's outside too.
I know. It's too noisy in my house. I can't find this place where my husband's not running around somewhere. So it's like, if I can be outside. And then
I might switch to outside because somebody is renovating an apartment in our building. And
I don't know. I hope I missed the whole thing. Mm.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, good morning, everyone.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. This would be Blair.
Birds.
Sounds pretty.
To look at you all for a minute. Okay, hang on. I'm going to check on my video for a second.
Wow.
Some noisy birds.
Yeah. They know I'm out here, you know? It's like,
they want to join in.
Yeah. Sometimes they yell like that if there's a hawk around or something.
I guess I would too.
Morning, good morning. All the sounds of the morning. Actually, a great way. Good morning, Beth.
Morning.
We're going to start
with
the birds and the sound. So, I actually have a poem I want to start with, and then we'll sit for a few minutes, and then you'll see why where we're going this morning. So, this poem is called "A Meditation on Beauty." It's by J. Estanislao Lopez, and it was published in the New Yorker in 2018. There are days I think beauty has been exhausted, but then I read about the New York subway cars that dumped into the ocean have become synthetic reefs. Coral gilds the stanchions, feathered with dim Atlantic light. Fish glisten, darting from a window into the seagrass that bends around them like green flames. This is human-enabled grace. So maybe there's room in the margin of error for us to save ourselves from the trends of self-destruction. Or maybe such beauty is just another distraction, stuffing our hearts with its currency, paraded for applause. Here in the South, you can hear applause coming from the ground. Even the buried are divided. At the bottom of the Gulf, dark with Mississippi silt, rests the broken derrick of an oil rig. And isn't oil also beautiful? Ancient and opaque, like an allegory that suggests we sacrifice our most beloved, likely ourselves. In one photograph, a sea turtle skims its belly across a hull, unimpressed with what's restored, barely aware of the ocean around it growing warm. Contradicting or paradoxical images of beauty. And we're going to talk about a little bit about beauty today and sit with that. So I wanted to sit first to begin with a little bit of time to just come into where you are comfortably. Sounds. I'm going to mute everybody. So we're not necessarily listening to each other's sounds. You'll just listen to your own sounds. I'll mute everybody in a moment and then you can unmute right afterwards. And I just to begin with, so let me do that for a moment first. There we go. Okay. So sitting with your own sounds and my voice for a moment, just find where you are in this moment. In this place, in the space, in your chair, on your sofa, at your desk, outside, inside. And just inhabit that space. Inhabit that space, feel the edges of where you are. Notice your breath as it makes its way in and makes its way out. Notice if it's easier today than yesterday or harder. You can pay attention to your experiences of fatigue, or maybe places of discomfort. If you start to notice you're judging them or thinking about how they got there, let yourself just come back to noticing them, to paying attention to them without the story. Just allowing your breath to come in and out. In this poem of paradoxes of beauty, Tiferet in Hebrew, glory or beauty. And sit perhaps for a few moments with just images of beauty that arise for you. Without judgment, don't try and manipulate what arises, but instead notice the edges, the centers, the colors, where it's whole, where it's frayed. So, beauty, Tiferet in Hebrew. this is the next step along our sphera, along our Jewish mystical ladder that we have been ascending these weeks leading up to Rosh Hashanah. And so this divine quality was called Tiferet. And if you were to imagine the picture that I showed you a couple of weeks, we talked about a tree or a human body. So we had the feet, we had the foundation of Mahut and Yesod, the truth, right? We had truth in our foundation. We had humility. We moved up through the legs. Tiferet is going to be in the very, the very center of what would be the body of this picture. I'll pull it up again at the end. Tiferet is like the balance point, if you were to imagine kind of this diagram, and Tiferet is right in the center, what is translated as beauty or sometimes glory. But it comes between the two qualities that we'll look at over the next 2 weeks before. It is a balance point, and that's actually its most important part. It's the balance point of chesed and gvura, these two qualities that are loving kindness and judgment. We talk a lot about judgment and mindfulness. And that Tiferet, the midah, the human quality that we embody to balance these out, is compassion, is rachamim in Hebrew. And that is because we need a balance of loving kindness, of pure loving kindness, and justice. And we're going to talk today a lot about sort of how those balance and what that means, what to embody an experience of compassion, how we mindfully embody an experience of compassion and the quality of compassion, and how, especially right now, why is that important in this journey of teshuva that we are making in these weeks? So the word rachamim, which is the Hebrew for compassion, and you've heard that word before, you go, that sounds familiar, in prayers. It's a quality that we talk about and embrace. We talk about chesed, we talk about which is loving kindness, we talk about rachamim, we talk about emet, truth. There are words that, I'm sure they bubble up and you go, sound is familiar. But rachamim is the same root as the, I do this all the time, has root, because Hebrew is all connected. That's what's kind of cool about it. It's the same Hebrew word as rechem, which is womb, uterus. And what's a rechem? A place of safety, right? And a place of, and here's where the musar, the character definition of rachamim comes in. It's all women out here, so it's okay, I can say this, right? So when, if we have held anybody in our lives, whether we have birthed children or not, I think there's a different kind of innate sense in a woman, but this idea of rechem to hold another human being in empathy. And this idea of empathy, not as we talk about it so much psychologically, but the idea of really holding the space of another human being. That's what a rechem does, right? That's what a womb does. It holds the space of another human being, a sacred relationship. So acting with compassion is about, and holding this in a mindful space is about how we hold other people, how we respond. Specifically, how we respond to their suffering. It's not just how we interact with them, but compassion is how do we create a space for them that alleviates their challenge, that alleviates their suffering. It's different than sympathy. And so recognizing the suffering of others mindfully means we need to be aware of their experiences. We need to be attentive to our own experience. So this whole practice of mindfulness is about how can we be present to what is around us, right? We practice about how we could be present to just what's going on in ourselves and sort of work with noticing the distractions that come back and forth. And so that practice attunes us to hopefully be able to play that out in other situations. And when we're not just focused on feeling what it feels like, on noticing the experiences of paying attention, of being distracted, of coming back to paying attention again. So fine-tuning that experience of paying attention helps us in this quality, because then we can be aware. We can be aware first of our own experience, right? Of our own experiences of suffering in this case, in order to then be able to attend to the experience of someone else. Being present, not lost in our own story, not lost in our own distraction. It requires that mindfulness, that discernment, so we can understand it and without judgment, and then be in a position to respond to someone with rachamim, with compassion, to relieve their suffering. And it's not, you know, relieving suffering. And I know I muted you all, so like unmute when you need to say something, or just wave, or, but I can't, you know, I Zoom is weird. I can only, I don't know, I could do a sermon on it, I guess. I can only mute you. I can't unmute you. you have to unmute yourselves. So relieving suffering, whether it's our own suffering or someone else's, isn't just about rescuing someone, right? It's not just about taking away that particular stimulus that you or they believe is causing their suffering, right? Sometimes it's about helping someone just to manage the challenges that they face. You know, maybe for ourselves, it is about finding coping rather than expecting someone else to fix something or save something for us. In work of teshuvah and the work that we're doing now, we may feel discomfort or even suffering when we do the inner work of taking stock of who we are, of our actions. We may feel even more discomfort in actually admitting our mistakes and failures, which is not easy to do. And we might feel even more discomfort or even an experience of suffering in trying to extend a true apology and taking steps to make amends. But that kind of discomfort, right, leads to our growth. It leads to us being the people we aspire to be. So there are times when compassion, right, extending compassion, whether it's to ourselves or to someone else, isn't about eliminating discomfort, but extending a sense of understanding, a sense of an open-heartedness that is temporary, that the suffering is temporary because there is some greater good. And it's a balance, because it's not, you know, we're not meant to be suffering in silence, but to understand that this work of rachamim is tricky. It needs the discernment, because we need to know when and how to act and respond in that holding, both for ourselves and then as we extend it to others. So I wanted to sit again for a moment with any questions or thoughts so far. Okay. So I wanted to sit again for a moment with another piece to reflect on before we continue, or as we continue. And this is a little bit of paying attention, now a mindful presence of our own experience. So before we can figure out how we respond with rachamim, with compassion to someone else's suffering, we need to pay attention to what's going on for ourselves. So as you're sitting, I want you to just notice. And you know, when we do this kind of sitting, I will speak for myself sometimes when I'm on the recipient end, where I'm sitting and thinking, like somebody may ask me to draw upon an image or an idea, and like I draw a blank. And that too is part of this process, like to just go, okay, wow, I have a blank right now, and sort of just be with that without judging yourself, without, you know, berating yourself, oh yeah, I can't remember anything. Like don't spin that narrative, just sort of then just be with the question and say, wow, okay, this is an open question. And see if just even in that practice, because sometimes I know, like I said, I know for myself, sometimes I draw blanks or I feel like I can't find what I want to find enough. And so sometimes it's just the practice is also just stepping back. So what I'm asking you to consider or let arise is just the question for yourself is how do you respond to yourself in general? Are you kind to yourself? Do you tend to judge yourself more? Again, this is without judgment. You're letting this sort of trickle into your consciousness. Do you tend to acknowledge the pain and source of your own suffering? Or do you push it aside? Sort of like go through a gentle Rolodex of experiences. Because that attentiveness, how we treat ourselves, how we acknowledge our own pain or suffering, can be instructive to how we interact with others. And what might the role, what might the experience of compassion be in making the changes that we are working toward in ourselves? Compassion toward ourselves. Compassion toward another. What suffering must be relieved? And what's the source of the suffering? So this divine quality of beauty expressed through this, expressed through our actions of compassion, of balancing deep kindness with justice, right? And that compassion of relieving suffering, right, in this part of our journey, right, that is the work of teshuva, right? How we act to relieve the suffering that we've caused in others, in ourselves, in the world, that's what doing teshuva is. I see it as a really critical part of our work of teshuva to be attentive to that experience of suffering both in ourselves and in the world, because we have to notice that, we have to pay attention to that in order to then take the next step of teshuva, to know what we've done, to know what we might have been the cause of. in a Hasidic compilation of teachings called Iturei Torah. A not well-known little Rebbe of Nicholsburg, Rebbe Shmelki of Nicholsburg, what a great name. He writes, it's a sign that a person has done teshuva if they behave according to the quality of rachamim, of this compassion. For transgressions foster cruelty in the human heart. As it is written in Deuteronomy, in Parashat Nitzavim, which we read on Yom Kippur, God will Adonai your God will turn your captivity, will relieve your captivity, and you will have compassion. So in other words, having the compassion unlocks the prison that we are in, right? The transgressions are because our hearts are closed. And so embodying compassion helps us to unlock what has gotten us stuck. That's a great little, but a person, and so the sign that the person has actually, what he says is, that's right, the sign the person has done teshuvah is that if they in fact can behave with, if the person can embody rachamim, because that, he sees that as a key to unlocking how we can be on this path. And there's another little piece from one of the Midrashim that talks about how God's sense of rachamim with us. When one who has hurt us sincerely asks for forgiveness, we are obligated to forgive. When we have compassion on another, okay, so when we can hold their suffering and work to alleviate their suffering, God has compassion on us. And when we have no compassion for another, God has no compassion for us. So this midah, this character trait, is so, the Midrash is saying, like, this is it, right? And how we behave, how we act, how we pay attention draws the divine presence into our lives. Rather than getting caught up in the God anthropomorphic as God does, but like we can create the experience around us, right? If we can imagine that our behaviors so then affect the divine universe and bring that to us. And if we can't find that compassion for another, nothing's going to happen for us. And the experience, the quality of compassion is even a trait ascribed to God. While we've talked about Tiferet as the divine quality, the beauty, this God is also called Rachum, right? Rachamim, Rachum. God is called compassionate. In Exodus 34, when Moses wants to see God and God says, can't look at me, and God's presence passes behind Moses, and Moses calls out these qualities of God that he's experienced. And we say this phrase in our High Holy Day liturgy, Adonai, Adonai, God, eternal God, El Rachum V'Chanun, God who is compassionate and gracious. Okay, and that repeats in Torah a couple of times. We see it again in Deuteronomy, in Deuteronomy. But it's even a quality that, while it's a human quality, we see in the Midrash that I just read too, like this idea of how can we hold not just our space, but the space of another human being. I'm so drawn to pay attention to this quality, because for me, it also feels like It's one of those qualities. I kind of feel like if everybody could just do this, right? Not worry about myself, but like, I mean, pay attention to my own experiences as instructive for how to behave with others. And if I could just hold others, if everybody could just hold everybody else, right? Then I know I would be held by somebody else. Like, it's, for me, it's like, it's one of those experiences that if everybody could just act with rachamim, the world would be totally different. It would just shift. but it's a balance. Like I said before, it's also a balance because it's not boundless, right? It has to be the right amount in the right situation. And for the right, for the right purpose. So, and which is why rachamim is this balance between loving kindness and judgment. So here's a, here's a midrash. It's Genesis Rabbah. There was a king who had delicate glass cups. He said to himself, if I pour hot water into them, they will expand and burst. If I pour cold water into them, they will contract and shatter. So what did he do? He mixed the hot water with the cold and poured it into them, and they didn't break. Smart man. So it is with God. When it came time to create the world, God reflected, if I create the world with the attribute of rachamim, of chesed alone, actually, well, he's just as compassion, loving kindness. If I create with chesed alone, there will be an overflow of wrongful acts because no one, of loving kindness only, right? No one will be afraid of punishment. But if I create the world with judgment, with din or gvura alone, how could the world possibly endure? It would shatter from the harsh measure of justice. So I must create it with both justice and loving kindness, and it will endure. So we need this balance. We need the compassion part in the middle. We need the balance of loving kindness and judgment in order to really have a livable world. We need a sense of accountability for our actions. That's part of our teshuvah work. And at the same time, we need a measure of forgiveness and of compassion, or the world would be too harsh to live in. So, and even God wrestles with this, our tradition teaches us. We're not alone. In Leviticus Rabbah, so that was a midrash on creation, of course. In Leviticus Rabbah, midrashim on Leviticus, on laws, and this is part of, it's actually applicable to, it refers to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The midrash says it's taught that our task, our human task, on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is through our repentance, prayer, and tzedakah, so I'll come back to that in a minute, to get God to move from Kisei Din, the seat of justice, to Kisei Rachamim, the seat of compassion. So our task, our human task on Rosh Hashanah is through repentance, prayer, and tzedakah, charity. So in our service, we're gonna sit, after we have this big moment of like judgment, justice, our prayers that say, you know, life is challenging. There are going to be people who are going to live this year, people who are going to die, things that are going to happen. We can't change the things that are going to happen, but what can we change? Uteshuva, right? Teshuva, utfila, prayer, utzedaka, righteousness. The Hebrew says ma'avirin et roa hagazera. It doesn't change what's going to happen, but it changes our experience of what's going to happen. And so this is referring to that prayer refers to this midrash, that it's those things that we do that change, that can shift, it doesn't shift what happens, but it shifts the experience, it shifts the world. And what does it even do? It moves God. It moves God from the seat of judgment to the seat of compassion. That's our job. Because we can't live in a world that is just filled with only judgment and justice, right? We must pray for, implore for ourselves from God, compassion. And if, you know, I think about this midrash, if we have to pray for God to be able to move from a place of judgment to a place of compassion, how hard is it for us to do that ourselves, to move from a place of judgment to a place of compassion? Like, if it's our prayer that has to move God. And judgment is our human tendency, but compassion tempers it to enable us to live with humanity. And we need to know that we have this power, this balance, that we know right from wrong. We live with justice, but it is not just strict justice that we live with. So rachamim, a mindfulness practice around rachamim, is how do we sit with both of those qualities? How do we notice our experience when we're sitting in a seat of judgment or a seat of compassion? How do we move ourselves back and forth at the right time? And how is doing teshuva, how is that turning of ourselves, our inner experience, moderated and modulated by that? How can we see suffering that we are experiencing, see suffering that we have caused, and then be moved to change that? That is embodying the midah of rachamim. So I can't unmute you. So unmute yourselves. I'm curious. I'm curious for your thoughts. Or we'll just sit for a minute, like looking at each other as we're thinking. Meryl. And then we're going to sit again. I have some more.
I have a lot of thoughts, but I'll try to narrow them down. I'm thinking a lot about parenting during the pandemic as like finding this balance between loving kindness and judgment, particularly parenting teenagers. I have a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old. So there have definitely been some challenges and just trying to figure out like what are the lines that I want to hold and what are the things that I'm willing to let go of? And then where to, can I find compassion with how difficult the situation is from them and that they're separated from their friends and that they don't get to go to school and what kind of behaviors might that lead to? And then how do you address inappropriate behaviors, but totally having compassion for the reasons that they're exhibiting those behaviors? So I think that's, you know, what I'm relating to as I'm listening, Cantor, to everything that you're saying today is this parenting during the pandemic.
Totally. Totally. I mean, everything. Yes, yes, yes. And so the thing that struck me though, that was so beautiful in what you said was like, how do you still have to parent them and yet to recognize that they are suffering, right? But that doesn't mean that what they're doing is okay.
Right.
So, you know, and I know your girls a little, and maybe to just like think with them, like to help them notice, to actually notice their suffering. Because a lot of times our actions, right, are a result of distress, inner distress, suffering, right? But we're not even aware of it. Like we're not even aware of it. And sometimes becoming like this, a mindful practice of becoming aware of that can then help shift it. Cause then we can go, oh, okay, I get that. You know, I have a terrible interaction with someone who appears regularly in my life. And like yesterday, and John was like, okay, like this brings all this up for you. Like, you know, somebody else to help like remind me like, oh, right. Okay. I don't need to. So I don't need to hold all that suffering anymore. So maybe with the girls too, is to like explore, like let them see and notice for themselves, like, oh yeah, this is awful. Because that may shift some of they may be able to exhibit and notice more control of themselves just by realizing like, oh yeah, okay, that is really crummy. And also for you acknowledging, like, I know you're suffering, like there's still boundaries, but I know it. And I think that is part of holding someone with compassion. It's not just doing it silently, but like naming it.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's teenagers are rough in a good time.
So true.
Other thoughts or questions or struggles or.
I, I think sometimes, you know, when you talk about compassion, I think, and then you say, but not so compassionate. I think that's it when we try to be compassionate, or, you know, in our minds, maybe many of us try to help people or try to, you know, and I guess it's sometimes the balance of taking, doing what you can for that person and then not taking it personally when maybe that they don't respond, or, you know, or it doesn't help in the way you want it to. Maybe that's, so I think that's the, you know, not being so, you know, going so one way.
Well, and right, because sometimes doing isn't the answer, right? Sometimes it is, we have to go deep enough to see what the source of the suffering is, to be present to what the source of the suffering is. And sometimes that can't necessarily be relieved. So the compassion is to just be with a person through that. we can't always eliminate the source of the suffering, but because suffering is an experience, it's a reaction, not an action. Suffering comes from a dissonance of, you know, what we desire versus what might be actually happening to us. We talk about suffering, but different people suffer because of different things, like different amounts of, for some people, it's a very little bit of dissonance between like what they expected and what actually happens. And it only takes a little bit of dissonance to cause suffering. And for other people, between what they expect and what happens could be like an abyss. But their nature or their spiritual nature is that that doesn't actually cause suffering, right? But that's what causes that suffering is the dissonance between what we hope for and or expect and what is happening and true in the moment. But it's only a dissonance if we experience that way. So sometimes it's just helping there not to be the experience of dissonance. We can't change necessarily what has happened, but our presence can help to alleviate the dissonance. And so it's even our own work of teshuvah, right? To be compassionate with ourselves, because as we look deep at ourselves, sometimes that can be very upsetting. It can cause suffering. So if we can hold ourselves with compassion and just see what is there, and without judgment, but do something about it, that too can relieve suffering. I think I stepped on someone saying something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you can't see what's the cause of someone's suffering from the outside. So compassion doesn't, has to be open. You know, maybe a little sense that they're suffering, but you don't really, you can't know.
Right. Or sometimes you might think you know, but yeah, until you explore it with them, right. Because you look at a situation and you might say, I would be suffering because of X, but that doesn't mean that that's the same for another person. Which is why, it's such a fascinating thought that rachamim, compassion, is this rechem, is the womb, right? The child is held in the womb. We don't know what the fetus experiences, but the mother's body is that safe place, is that holding, is that protection. And so that's how we offer compassion, is to be that safe kindness. And what gets in the way of that so often for us is our judging minds, right? This is the other side of it, is our judging minds. So I wanted to sit one more time with that. With this idea of judging, I'm going to ask you to hold another space. So if you've moved or shifted or need to shift, or and just let go of your breath. Sometimes talking about things, we don't even realize sort of how we've held our breath or shifted our breath. And our breath allows our body to settle once again and just notice ourselves, our own space. So I wanted to sit for a moment to think. So I'm going to ask you to call up to your mind or heart. It doesn't have to be, it can be a little thing, a big thing, but somebody that you judge harshly. Could be a long time ago, could be recent, could be once, could be ongoing. Just the first thing that comes up. Someone that you judge harshly. Without paying attention, I don't want to focus on the judgment part. I want you to feel that, just feel the experience of judgment and see if you can notice what keeps you from feeling compassion toward that person. Don't judge, there's no judgment in what it does, just to notice someone who you judge harshly, but what keeps you from holding that person with compassion? And just sense those barriers for the moment. See, read, feel, hear, see what they are. And as you notice those barriers, as you sit with those barriers, see if there's a point of connection that you might make with that person, a pinhole. That might allow you to consider them with more compassion. Thank you. remember considering holding someone with compassion doesn't actually mean you have to like them. Right? But this whole experience of that is in fact the work of teshuvah, right? Our making amends, our journey of introspection and of changing ourselves stems from changing ourselves first, not changing other people. So opening our heart, right? That earlier teaching, opening our heart, the journey of teshuva is measured by compassion, right? Because if we're cruel, if we have a closed heart, if we can't hold another human being as a divine human being, it closes us up, right? It makes it harder for us to become the selves we are striving to be. So working on paying attention to our inner journey and experience allows us to see the world more clearly. But holding another human being with compassion doesn't change, it's not about changing their behavior, it's changing our behavior in the world. It doesn't mean that they haven't done something, they maybe have wronged you. And not apologizing, like they're not doing their teshuva and that's not important here. What is important for us is how we can change who we are. And even the practice of holding someone who's difficult, someone who we judge with compassion allows us to relieve ourselves of the burden of judgment. And so then we can do work of ourselves better, more easily, more thoroughly, more effectively. And we're not burdened with that experience of judgment. So I wanted to leave us there because sometimes that's like the struggle that can be a, I don't know, for me, I guess, misconception about compassion is that we have to be, quote, nice to or like people who aren't nice. Like, that's not what this is. But it's about how it changes who we are by the way we see and hold other people, regardless of how they behave, with obviously the right boundaries of what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. But when we walk around with the weight of judgment in our hearts, it makes it very hard for us to grow ourselves. So for this coming week, we can all, I'm with you. We can all continue to practice a little bit of rachamim with ourselves in these days, and notice sort of where we judge ourselves and how we can work with that differently, and how when we can be more compassionate with ourselves, we can start to do even better that work of teshuva, of changing ourselves, of making amends where we need to, and holding ourselves and others with a balance of loving kindness and judgment, this place of compassion. Any last thoughts or questions? Small work for the week. Okay. Well, great to see you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to see everybody.
Tomorrow morning.
Bye.
Have a great day. Holiday. We'll see you. Whoever's on for challah, we're going to braid around challah tomorrow.
Is it going to be a six braid again?
It's not, no, it actually uses four, my round one uses four strands.
So it's the same recipe, just a different way of
braiding. It's a different way of braiding it. Yeah, I don't change the recipe.
I have to look at YouTube about four braiding. That's how I got comfortable with the six braiding. So.
I'll go over the six braiding with you again, no problem.
The four is fine. I think I got the six. I got it.
Good. All right, I'll see somebody tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Right,
everybody.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.